think about the people that have helped you through your life and looked at you and said, you're okay. Like you're okay. I believe in you. What if you didn't have that? Because there are a lot of people out there who don't have that. So I feel that that is really the work that we need to do. We need to start lifting people up and making them a priority. I think we really do.
Welcome to Rochester Business Connections, powered by Baubert Marketing, LLC, where I get the chance to chat with Rochester, New York's very best business owners, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. I am your host, Ben Albert. Don't forget to subscribe, and remember, we don't do advertisements. My fee for this show is simple. If you gain value from the episode, personally share with a friend and explain your favorite part. Let's get started. I am here with Linda Heeler. Linda, pleasure to have you. How are you this morning?
I am doing very well. Thank you so much, Ben, for having me here. I am really excited to talk to you.
Me as well. Ultimately, you are a life leadership executive coach at Live Inspired Life Coaching for over 10 years, and you're a podcast host yourself, the Normalize Podcast. So we can have kind of two streams running in this conversation. But I ultimately want to start with what you do as an executive coach, as a life coach. Maybe a lot of people have one. A lot of people maybe have never talked to a therapist or talked to a coach or anything like that. And maybe they don't think they need one or even understand what the role is. So kind of give us a bird's eye view of what your business is and why it's important.
Well, you ask a really good question. And a lot of people don't understand what the difference is between therapy and coaching. And so I do a lot of educating people about what coaching is and what it isn't. And so coaching is, it's future-based. It's about you're here, this is where you are today, and where do you want to go in the future? So if you're struggling with something in the past, if you've got some wounds from the past, that's definitely a therapy issue. And I like to say, even though coaching is not therapy, it can be therapeutic. And it also picks up where therapy leaves off. So I know personally, I can speak from my experience and some experience with my clients is that with coaching, with therapy, I did therapy for a few years and I got great benefit from it. I think therapy is very, very important. I still had the anxiety about, okay, I have some goals and I know the actions I should be taking to get where I want to go, but I am terrified to step outside my comfort zone. And I needed some tools. I needed something. And that's when I discovered coaching. And it was funny because it's something that I had been looking for because I had actually gone back to school to be a therapist because I figured if my therapist couldn't totally fix me of my anxiety, right, then I was going to go to school and fix myself. And I just so happened to meet a coach and go, coaching? What is this? And that was back in 2008. And so that's how I worked with a coach, got great value from it. And then I just said, this is what I want to do. This is what I know that there's a market for this, that people want to get somewhere. They actually want to enjoy their life. So I think that for me, I work with a lot of women, especially who are, I call them drivers and strivers. Mm-hmm. And they're really driven and they want, they're goal oriented. But if you ask them if they're happy, a lot of times they'll say no. And I'm embarrassed to admit that because I have it all. I've got a family, I've got a good family, I've got a good life, I've got a good job, but I'm not happy. And so that's where coaching comes in.
Well, yeah, I mean, anyone who's highly driven, a lot of type A people, goal oriented, it's sometimes hard to remember that you need to be happy as well. You need to take time to enjoy the process and make sure you're happy. So that's where you come into play, and you've been doing it over 10 years. It sounds like, in a way, it was almost just like flip the switch, and then you became a coach. It couldn't have been that simple, right? Like, what were you doing before you were a coach, and was there an official tipping point, that when you officially made that decision to become one?
Well, yes. So I was a dental hygienist for over 20 years before I became a coach. And
Not a glamorous job.
no, not at all. And it's really nice now to have a job where I don't have to have my hands in people's mouths and I can actually have a conversation with them, a two-way conversation. So that's really nice. So you asked, was there a tipping point? I would say that just meeting that coach, and just really realizing that there was hope, that there was possibility. And then working with that coach and seeing the value and the benefit that I got. Now, I will tell you that the person I am today, I was going to say the person I am today is very different than the person I was 10 years ago. I would say that I'm the same person. It's just the layers of, we call it your survival mechanism, the limiting beliefs and the negative thought patterns and the fears. Those have been, I've worked really hard to peel those away so that who I really am is, it is becoming more evident. It's being revealed. And that's what I do. And so it's, I would say, he talk about transformation. Sometimes transformation happens in an instant. Like I've had that happen, like 1 minute I'm one way, and then all of a sudden something happens and like, whoa, like I'm changed. Like my beliefs are changed. Something's changed inside of me. However, transformation can also happen over time. And then one day we wake up and go, whoa, I would react this way to when this happens, and now I'm reacting a different way. What happened? Well, it's all of those little steps and little changes that you've made, that I've made over time, that create that transformation. So I would say for coaching, to get for me to become a coach, it was all of those little steps that, and then it was a lot of support. My husband, especially, he has been such a great support because he knew I was struggling. Dental hygiene, I loved it. I loved the people. It was great. It was good for me because it got me out of the house, and because I had a lot of social anxiety. And so that's really what I needed to work on with my coach. But then I really needed that push. And he's just like, dear, if this is what you need, just let's figure it out. And we had two kids in college or coming up for college. And, for me to decide I want to become a coach and then have to go through coach training and all of this stuff and the travel, and it was crazy. But anyway, I digress. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, you did. Well, I like how you explained how a bunch of little, even minute changes over time can lead to something huge. And the common analogy I hear a lot is, something like if I were to poke you in the same spot, wouldn't hurt very much the first few times. But once I poked you 400, 500, 5,000 times, you're going to start to bruise. And let's say you have trauma in your life, or you're just getting over something or working on a new skill. you can't expect to be perfect overnight. And, you know, going to the gym, the gym's a great example because a lot of times you see benefit quickly and then it kind of stops. Like you lose a couple pounds real quick, you start to look a little stronger, and then you kind of plateau. But if you keep working on it, then long term, you gain lots of benefits. So it's probably never a bad time to start seeing a coach because you're not going to become whole and perfect overnight just because you saw a coach once. So let's say me or a listener is considering having an executive coach, having a life coach. So you mentioned you work with a lot of high achieving women. What is, you know, your client base? Do you work with all ages, all types? How do I know? This is like a loaded question, but all ages, all types. How do I know if I need a coach or a therapist? How do I know if you're a good fit for me? I know you address these questions all the time, so I'm just wondering, should I call you if I'm curious, or is there a specific kind of person that you do well with or any of that?
Well, yes. Yes, there is a specific type of person, one that clicks with me. And okay. I don't know who that is until we have a conversation. So I would say that if you're interested in coaching and you're not sure, I am happy to have that conversation with you. Because what I do in a coaching consultation is we talk about what are you looking for? What are your, you know, where do you want to be? And then we talk about what the best fit for what type of coach is the best fit for you. We talk about the differences in the types of coaching. Does the person want a coach who is trained? Because anyone can print out a card and say they're a coach. You do not, there's no state or federal regulations. And there are some good coaches out there that don't have any training. However, I personally, when I became a coach, I didn't have the confidence to go out and just start coaching. And my first coach said to me, he goes, when I told him, I said, I think I want to do what you do. And he's like, great. He said, you can print out a card and say you're a coach. And I go, absolutely not. How can I do that? I was dealing with my anxiety, and my anxiety didn't just go away just because I started coaching. It has taken many years to work on that. So anyway, I wanted training. And so he sent me to the International Coach Federation, which is basically the coaches, American Medical Association. It's our association, and it is the gold standard for coaching. So through there, I was able to research coach training programs that are accredited through them, because the ICF also offers credentialing through them. So once you graduate from that coach training, that accredited coach training program, you have so many hours of clients, you have so many, you have to sit for an exam. I mean, it's pretty extensive. And so at one point when I first started this, I never thought I would get my credentialing, because one of the things we have to do is we have to record calls with or sessions with a client. And we have to have a certain number of those, and we have to receive a certain level of competency. And I was terrified. As soon as that recording went on, I was terrified and I would freeze. That was the level of anxiety that I was dealing with. And so thank goodness I had the support of a coach to help me through that as I was getting my credentialing. And so I was able to achieve, you know, I was able to achieve my credentialing. So I'm pretty proud of that. Because that was not easy. That was not easy. So training, is training important to you? And then one thing I will tell you, this is a little tip for people who are, thinking about working with a coach. If you have a job right now and you're thinking about coaching, check your company, because sometimes the company go to HR and say, look, will the company pay? Do they have a coaching program? Because a lot of companies have coaches that they work with. Also, if they say, no, we don't, but you could say, look, if I was to hire a coach, would you reimburse me?
Right.
And if you are going for a job, you can ask that same question. Does the company offer coaching? And if they don't, you can say, well, I would really like to hire a coach. Could that be part of my benefit package? And I have had clients that have done that, and they've gone. And so that's really, I can call myself an executive coach, because the only difference between a life coach and an executive coach is who pays.
Sure.
So if the company pays, I'm an executive coach. If the individual pays on a personal level, I'm a life coach. So I think that is something that, you know, you can, I think that's a great tip. And I've had a few clients who've taken advantage of that.
It is a great tip. And it's still the same, Linda, no matter how you get the coaching. I'm wondering a few things. So first off on this, ultimately, talk to your accountant, your CPA, talk to someone professional. You might know better than me, but I'm a small business owner. If I have a valid reason that this kind of training, coaching is to help me in my business, it is tax exempt. So you might not be able to get someone to pay for it, you know, pay for it for you, but at least you won't have to pay taxes on ultimately that income. That'll come out of your income. You pay a little bit less taxes. It's a tax exempt business expense. So that's at least a consideration that you should talk to an accountant about. And in addition, you were talking about when you were first going through that process of getting certified and going through, you know, all the checks and balances and all the struggles of the anxiety and getting through that. And you were basically a coach for, were these subjects? Were they your clients? The reason I ask is I don't know if there's like a volunteer program where someone can come in and maybe have a starting coach. They don't have the 10 years experience yet. Can I come in as a volunteer for this kind of program?
Well, you might be able to find a coach who is looking to record sessions.
Okay.
So that is a possibility. I know that through my coach training program, we had, it was a monthly program. I would go to New York City one weekend every month, and we were assigned. They had three people who were guest clients. And so they were volunteers, and they took turns. Each of us, each month, got a guest client to coach, or not. Everybody did, but those three clients. And there is that possibility that you could do that. I will have to say, I do, and I have done pro bono work, but I'm very picky about it, because when I first started, I did some pro bono, I did some lower pay coaching. I found in my experience that I have to be very discerning who I work with, because coaching it's about you stepping outside your comfort zone. It is uncomfortable work. So what I have found is if people don't have any skin in the game,
right,
they're not going to show up. And I'm going to be there. Like I'm going to be there. I'm going to coach you, but it really is the client's work to do. And so one way that we get people to do the work is to plunk down that green stuff. It's not cheap. Coaching is not cheap. It takes your time and it takes your money. And if you are not ready, if you're not ready to jump in both feet, and you can be scared. That's okay, because we want to be scared and do it anyway.
Right.
But if you're not ready, I'm very picky about who I work with, and I can usually tell whether you're ready. And I've turned people away and say, yeah, you're not quite ready. It's not the right time. You change your mind, come back, and we'll have another conversation, because this is hard work to do. And I say one other thing too is, yes, the tax exempt, you are absolutely right. I have clients who issue me a 1099 at the end of the year, and they write off their coaching, as a business expense. So absolutely, that is very true. And then the other thing I wanted to say about when you are looking for a coach, interview, I tell clients, and I took this from the dental world, right? Okay. So the dentist would recommend, you need a crown, or you need a root canal, or you need this tooth pulled, or whatever. He would always say this, and this was very ethical guy, so respect him, go get a second opinion. He goes, if the patient was kind of questioning, he's like, hey, go get a second opinion. And so a few years ago, I hired sales coaches and all of this stuff. And I spent all this money, and they're like, this is what you do. This is the formula. Well, I didn't get one client because it wasn't me. It was salesy and pushy. And I'm like, I can't do this. This makes me feel yucky. I don't want to make clients feel this. And you got to close. And I'm like, no. So never forget talking to my husband sitting on the couch. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. This is not good. I am going to do what we used to do in the dental office. I'm going to educate people about what it is that I do. And then I'm going to tell them to go get a second and a third opinion and go interview at least two other coaches. And then if they come back to me, then I know and they know that we're the right fit. And if they don't, then that's great, because then they find the right coach that fits best for them. So since I've done that, I don't sell anymore.
Yeah.
And I just, the client, they just show up and we have a conversation. I don't have to push. They make the decision. I don't have to. It's just easy.
I don't know who, and we don't have to throw them under the bus, but I don't know who these coaches are that are, you have to close, because I personally, at one point, I worked in a call center, and I understand maybe a one call close in a situation that you're actually not offering that much value. But if you're offering value, if part of the quality relationship involves them bringing skin in the game and investment, you really shouldn't be overselling something. You should be authentically yourself. You should be coming from a place of authority and trying to determine, are they a good fit for you? Are you a good fit for them? Because then once you create that relationship, both parties benefit so much better than if you just used, neuro-linguistic programming or certain word tracks or tie downs to sell them. So you're selling them coaching. You can't just, it's like you're starting off the relationship on a bad note. So I don't want to have to throw this person under the bus, but I don't know who told you that. Any other mistakes, or, if you were to go back to Linda starting this role, I mean, you've already mentioned a few here, just in terms of stylistically and not charging enough or figuring out what clients, I think you've already named a bunch, but anything else that you would you do anything differently if you could go back 15 years, or did it all kind of happen for a reason?
That is a really great question, because I've thought about that, and I've thought about the question. I know that one question that you had posed was, what would I tell my 18-year-old self?
Yeah.
And so they're kind of along the same lines. And it's very interesting, because I just did an interview with a young woman. In fact, the podcast comes out today. I know that this is going to be many months from now, but it's with a young woman who she is a recovering addict. And she talks about the lessons that her addiction taught her. And she basically said that without all the bad stuff, the quote bad stuff, she wouldn't be who she is today. And so I would love to say that I would go back and change something, but then I would be different. Yeah. I wouldn't be who I am today. And yeah. I just like to think that those were the lessons that I needed at the time. And so, okay, that's what I needed. And now I can take those lessons. I think the biggest thing, but here's what just popped into my head. I think the biggest thing that the biggest lesson that I could take from all of those lessons was to forgive myself of my past mistakes. Forgive myself quicker, because I have a tendency to hold on to things and to use it as permission to beat myself up. And so I think, you know, self-compassion, more self-kindness, more self-compassion, more forgiveness of myself so that I can learn the lesson and, you know, clean up whatever I have to clean up with that mistake, and then take that and use that wisdom that I just got from that lesson or that failure, and then move on and just keep going.
Self-compassion. And it's such a loaded question because it goes back to kind of how you started the conversation, that there's lots of little steps and little changes that are made to lead you up to where you are today. So it's hard to just say, oh, I would have just been more compassionate. You kind of had to train that compassion for yourself muscle. I know this, Linda, because I'm like you. I've had, and personally, I don't know your whole story, but I've had anxiety my whole life. I mean, I hardly even opened my mouth until I was 13. And ultimately, I was having a bar mitzvah and I was reading Hebrew out of a Torah and I was singing and my voice was cracking. And it was the scariest thing I've ever done in my life. I had hardly even opened my mouth for over 10 years. So would I do it differently? Probably not, because that anxiety and that stress and that chip on my shoulder, that never being outgoing enough, never being charming enough, never being talkative enough, always being like a slower response, not being the quickest witted guy, helped me learn and kind of microanalyze and dissect things that people that don't run into those issues might not ever even consider. And, you know, someone who was maybe a drug addict, they're going to experience issues that someone who was not, I mean, God forbid anyone becomes a drug addict, but they're going to experience issues that you might not ever have, you know, experienced if you didn't go through that, and you could be stronger for it. So I'm just sort of adding on my thoughts to the question, the experience. And I want to, in a moment, couple things. I want to talk a little bit about Rochester, because I always like to bring Rochester into the fold, because this is a Rochester podcast, a Western New York podcast. Then we're going to talk about the Normal Lies podcast, which ultimately is awesome, and I'm going to be on that. By the time this comes out, my episode is out. But before we move into those two topics to come, anything on coaching, life coaching, executive coaching, anything that we missed out on, or, you know, any closing statements, or are we good to move to the next one?
I think we covered a lot. I just want to encourage people to check it out and reach out to me if you're trying to discern. I love the word discern, not figure out, but you're trying to discern whether coaching is for you or whether maybe it's therapy. And like I said, even if I'm not the coach for you, I don't care. I love these conversations. And this is how I find the people that I am meant to work with. So no pressure. It's just, let's have a conversation. So, and if you have any questions further about life coaching or executive coaching or any other type of coaching, feel free to reach out.
I will post a link in the show notes, but what's a good way to reach out to you? Is it LinkedIn, phone number, website? How should I reach out to talk to you? Because at the end of the day, that conversation is the first step. And then both me or any listener and you decide together that coaching is a good fit. So it's very low risk to have that conversation. How do I reach out?
So I will tell you, I love LinkedIn. Love LinkedIn, but I am a little picky about who I connect with because I get so many people who are trying to sell to me. So I only really connect with people that I know. So you can send me a message on LinkedIn and maybe we can have a conversation there. But what I really love, if you go to my podcast website, which is normal-lies.com, there you can reach me through the contact page, or this is so cool. At the bottom right-hand corner of, I believe it's on every page, there's a little blue microphone. And if you click on that, you can actually leave me a voicemail. What? On my website. Yes.
What?
Yes. It is the coolest thing. So I got my first one not too long ago. And yes, it was so fun to get that message in my email. It's like, oh, you have a voicemail from your website. So feel free to leave me a voicemail and I will get back to you.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so three options, guys. So I like to post LinkedIn profiles in the show notes, but here's the thing. If you reach out to Linda, this is just a general tip. Stop connecting to people on LinkedIn without leaving a note, especially if you hardly know them or don't know them. So if you do connect with Linda, you're going to want to put in that note that you heard her on this podcast so she knows not to deny your request. You can go to the website and leave a voicemail message, which is, I'm going to have to go just see how, I might just leave you one for fun after this. Or if for whatever reason you have anxiety and you don't want to leave a voicemail and don't want to just randomly LinkedIn message somebody, fill out the contact form, send an email. But I'm going to try that out. I think that's a really cool feature. And even if let's say I add it to my website, even if virtually no one uses it, that one person that does is just got to like make your day, right?
Yeah, definitely. It was so fun. It was so fun. Yeah.
So we could go on forever. Let's move to just Rochester, Western New York. I'm curious, are you a native to the area or did you kind of just fly your way over here at some point?
I am a native. I born and raised and still live in Avon. So I am south of the 390 or where, anyway, I don't know. What's that? I don't know. What do they always say? South of the thruway. That's what it is. I'm south of the thruway. Yeah. That's when the weather happens, it's like, oh, the snow is happening south of the thruway. Well, that's us. So born and raised here. I moved to Genesee County for a few years after my husband and I got married. We bought a house over there, but it wasn't far enough away. So we ended up traveling back and forth to Avon anyway, because our family is here. So raised our kids here. I love this area. I've traveled and this area is so beautiful. And I know you're going to talk about Rochester. I love the Rochester area. And when I was going through coach training, I would always say I was from Rochester because nobody knows Avon. I mean, town of 6,000 people, it's a little teeny small town.
I know Avon.
But there's a lot of people in the area who don't know where it is. We're in Livingston County, but which I love. But it was so funny because I didn't even realize I was doing it, but I would talk about all the great things about Rochester. And so the leader of our program, who is the CEO of the company, he was leading our program. He started calling me the mayor of Rochester. He's like, okay, and next we'll hear from the mayor of Rochester. And because I just loved it here. This area is some of the most beautiful, I think, in the world, honestly, definitely in the country. And what is so wonderful about this area is our parks. Mm. So my husband and I, we love to go canoeing. And so we'll go to Hemlock Lake and we'll go canoeing. But and then maybe in the evening, we'll go up to Rochester and see a show or go to one of the many restaurants that are amazing. We have some of the finest restaurants and food.
Yeah.
Anywhere, even in New York City. I mean, I would go to New York City for my training weekends and I've traveled there. And I got to tell you, New York City, Rochester ranks right up mm-hmm. there with the food in New York City. It really does.
Yeah, I find New York City or any large city, mm-hmm. it's hard to, unless you're doing a lot of research or asking all the locals, it's hard to know where to go or what to get. In Rochester, for me, I love ethnic food. Just pick a spot. Everywhere you go is so good. Like, we've got the best food here. I love it. I'm wondering, and in a moment, let's talk about the Normalized podcast. I kind of want to ask a different question here. I've obviously never asked this before. A question I often ask, Linda, is favorite things about, you know, Western New York, and then maybe some challenges or things that you would do differently or advice, or if you were the mayor, Linda, ultimately, what you would change. So I want to ask, is there any normal lies about Rochester or Western New York? Anything that we normalize that maybe isn't totally true or it's a lie?
Well, I'd probably have to do some research on that. Yeah. What I can say is that is wonderful. It's just like anything else. Mm. It's not a perfect area. We're not right. perfect. Rochester area is not perfect. We have a lot of work to do.
Right.
Social justice, poverty. It's bad. I mean, it is really bad and we need to do something about it. And I think that we're starting to. Also, the prison system needs to be reformed. Mm-hmm. We have, again, we just have a lot of work to do. And it's something that I've been interested in for many years. I actually, at one point, for 5 years, was part of a program called Step by Step. It started, I believe, back in 1992, and then sometime, I don't know, in the early 2000s, I think, it was taken over by the Volunteers of America. And it's a program for women who are incarcerated or at risk of being incarcerated or who have come out.
Right.
And so it's basically a strengths-based program of workshops. And so I started helping first with the workshops for women who came out of prison and jail, the Monroe County Jail. And then I actually started going into the Monroe County Jail with our facilitator and co-facilitating these workshops. And I will tell you that we need reform. Because people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And again, I am speaking from my experience, is that our prison system is housing people right now who have not been treated with dignity and respect for the majority of their lives, at least the ones that I have come into contact with. Not all of them.
Sure.
I should say not all of them.
Of course.
But they're born into poverty. They're not told that they are worth something. They're told the exact opposite. Mm. And so our job was to go in and give them hope and look at them and say, you are worth it. You are worthy of life, of turning your life around. And I saw women change their lives simply because these facilitators and other people looked at them and said, you can do this. And we're on your side and we're going to help you. Again, it's your work to do. You have to do the work, but we believe in you. And there are women who never had that, anyone believe in them. And you think about that. Think about the people that have helped you through your life and looked at you and said, you're okay. Like you're okay. I believe in you. What if you didn't have that? Because there are a lot of people out there who don't have that. So I feel that that is really the work that we need to do. We need to start lifting people up and making them a priority. I think we really do.
Wow. I've got the goosebumps, Linda. And it's so true. I mean, everyone does deserve that dignity and respect. For me, I like to, when I fail sometimes, I like to always give it unless you truly prove me otherwise. And then I'm still not going to be malice. I'm just going to find a different person in my life. But I like to lead personally with dignity and respect. And it goes back to the start of the conversation. If you personally, the listener, Linda already does, I can already tell. If you, the listener, if I do better as well, start treating people like humans, treating them with that love, that respect, that life. It's, again, it's the trickle. It's the little things that are going to add up to a lot. We could save someone's life. We could keep them out of ever getting to prison. We can help them change their life once they get out of prison. And ultimately, karmically, the karma thing, if you're putting out a bunch of bad energy and if you're treating people poorly, it's going to come back around. But if you're treating people with dignity and respect, it goes without saying that they're going to treat you the same way as well. So a lot came up for me in just that, Linda. I think it's an incredible message. And that's more than just a Rochester, New Yorker, a Western New Yorker. That is for humans on planet Earth, right? Everybody should be doing this immediately, right?
Correct. Correct. And, you know, that brings me to what you just said.
Yeah.
You talked about a lie. And so, and this is not just unique to Rochester, New York. So you talk about the biggest lie that we have been swimming in is this white supremacy culture. And I bet that there are some white people who just winced when I use that term white supremacy, because we've been taught that we shouldn't talk about it. And if you're, now I'm not talking about white supremacists, that's mm-hmm. different. Yeah, I'm not a white supremacist. And you are, and I'm sure you're not a white supremacist. Those are the people, that's the KKK, the white nationalists, all of that.
Right.
I'm talking about is this white supremacy culture that we have been born into, and it's a lie. And what I'm doing now with my research is there are characteristics of this white supremacy culture that we have been born into that is not just affecting our friends of color, it's affecting us white folks too. And one of, you know what the very first characteristic of white supremacy culture is? Hmm. Can you guess?
Judgment or bias based on looks or proximity kind of thing? I don't know.
That's part of it. That's part of it. The very first one is perfectionism.
Hmm.
So think about that. And that I will tell you that is something I have struggled with in my life and still do. The majority of my clients that come to me, perfectionism. is running their life because they got to get it perfect, because someone, society we have been born into, says that this is the ideal and you have to be right. You can't get it wrong. You can't make a mistake. You have to be perfect. And this is what we've been born into. And so this whole social justice, what I'm learning is, and I used to hear people say, well, it's, you know, this is good for white people too, to have this whole social justice, you know, work and do all this work to shift this. And it's like, well, okay, you know, yes, because I want what's fair. I don't like things that aren't fair. So yeah, it's going to make things more fair for me. But my eyes are really being open to the level of how we all are being impacted by this culture that we have been born into. So, so I would definitely say that that's probably the biggest lie. And there's a list. I would have to pull up the list to go through all of them, but it will right. blow your mind if you look at the characteristics, because we all are being impacted by those characteristics. I don't care what color your skin is.
Wow. And these are heavy, important, necessary topics that you ultimately cover on the Normalize podcast, right? So ultimately, if any of this is resonating with you, if you want to hear more about this, if it's something that's important to you, your podcast is a great place to go and listen to dive deeper in some of these conversations, right? What are some of the expectations I might have, what should I expect if I listen to Normalize podcasts? Is there any certain episodes that I should start with? Should I just start from the first one and binge listen? That's always a good idea too, but let's talk a little bit more about the podcast itself.
Yeah, thank you. So basically the podcast is about, well, as a coach, my job is to question those negative thought patterns, those limiting beliefs, question those fears. We want to pull them up and not make them the enemy. We want to make those your best friend. Like, you want to get to know that voice in your head. We're always trying to push it down.
Right.
No, we don't want to do that, because what we resist persists. And the more you push it down, the stronger it's going to come back. So what we do is, that's my job, is to ask questions and get you into action so that all of that stuff, again, I call it your survival mechanism, pops up so that we can see it. And then you get to decide how you want to respond to it. So that's basically, the podcast is about that, the voice in our head, and separating who we are, who we truly are, who we were born to be, from the voice in our head. But it's more than that. It's then, again, like I said, society. We have to be aware that we were born into this society that has all of its messages that we internalize, that we can have our parents telling us we're awesome, we're great. But then if we don't look like that model on the magazine page, we can make up the story. Well, I'm great, but I'm not as good as her, right? Or I'm not as good as him, who's a professional athlete. So we then start making up these stories because of all of the lies that we've been sold by society. Mm. So the podcast is about both, and they are intertwined. They are just totally intertwined. The more I do this, the more it becomes clear. It's really amazing. As far as episodes, what I would recommend, yes, you can go to the first one and you can, you know, that's kind of an overview of the podcast, but you can also just look at the different episodes and the different titles and the guests, and you can just click on one and that resonates with you. Mm-hmm. And just see where you go from there. I will tell you, the ones that I've gotten the most comments from is episode number 3, my first guest, who was Amanda Harrington, who is my daughter. And we talk about what's called momming, shaming, and vulnerability hangovers, because she talks about, she's a mom now. She's married and she's got a 3-year-old, and she talks about and she's a working mom. Like, she works full time. She's a mom. She's a wife. So how does she juggle all of this? And I also asked her some questions about growing up. And so there are some moments in that episode where I am really uncomfortable because she tells me her experience of some of the things that I did as a mom, not to shame me, not to make me feel bad, but say, you know, as a mom, I did the best that I could back then. I know that now, but my parenting had an impact on her, and I didn't always make the right decision, maybe.
Sure.
But it's an injury, especially if you have kids, and especially adult kids. I think that's a really good episode. The other ones, again, that I think are really good. So my friend Michelle Westcott, she is she's Black, and so we have a couple of I think it's episodes 11 and 12. Where we talk about basically some issues from her perspective as a Black woman and my perspective as a white woman. And again, it's just our perspectives. We're not speaking, she's not speaking for, you know, all of Blacks. I'm not speaking for all of whites or even all white women or all Black women. It's just our perspectives. And those are really interesting conversations. My goal with this podcast is to not be afraid to talk about those things that we're afraid to talk about, because that's the only way we can change. It really is. So you could start with the Mother's Day one. I did a little 10-minute thing on Mother's Day, because it's not always a happy day for mothers. So pick one and start.
Yeah, anybody listening, ultimately, Normalize podcast, I will put that in the notes. Start with those 2 or 3, and then you can even go on. At the time of recording this episode, it's not out yet, so I'm like super excited to hear it myself. But by the time this comes out and you're listening or watching to this today, ultimately, I was on the Normalize podcast, so you can also start with that episode, or start, you know, from the first one and move your way up the ladder and listen to mine. I haven't heard it yet, so I'm excited to hear that. But again, by the time this comes out, that's out. So let's just listen to them back to back or something like that, you know. Again, I'll put a link in the notes. Normalize podcast. You're doing something real special here, that the introspection I get when listening to an episode is something I don't always get in my day-to-day life. So I think it's a valuable thing to do.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes. Okay. So that's going to be my start with Ben's episode.
Start with the other ones. Start with the other ones and then work your way up to mine. And yeah, I'm not that special, but let's move on to rapid fire round. I know we're coming up short on time. We're going to have to do probably 5 of these. But let's do the rapid fire round just to get to know Linda a little bit better. So, coffee or tea?
Oh, definitely tea.
What about cats or dogs?
I like dogs, but I love cats.
Morning person or night owl?
Oh, I'm definitely a morning person.
We have all 4 seasons. Do you have a favorite time of year, favorite season of the year?
This is a tough one. I would say, as I was thinking about this, I would say probably fall, just because we're coming off a hot summer. I like the fall warm days and the cool nights. And then we're also leading up to the holidays, which I love.
So it can be a longer answer if you want to explain, but any podcasts or books that you're currently listening to or that just really left an impression, any podcasts or books that you would recommend?
Well, other than yours, I mean, definitely recommend Ben's podcast. I haven't listened to your music podcast yet, so I definitely want to check that out.
Check out, and I'll send you a link. Anybody who enjoyed this conversation, listen to the episode with Zahaya Roll. And it's self-explanatory when you listen to it. Her music's incredible. She speaks of social justice. She speaks of her feelings and her experience. And that episode, I have two parts with her. The first episode I had with her was super long form. It's like over an hour long. And then the second one is like a 25-minute quick bite that you can just gain so much in just that 20 minutes. So I might put that link in the notes as well. But that's Zahaya Roll on the Rochester Groovecast podcast. But I interrupted you. Anything else that you would recommend, Linda?
Yeah, I'm just making a note of that. Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out. That's awesome.
I'll literally email it as soon as we get off, and it'll be in the notes so the listeners can click it real easily.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate that. Podcasts. So the one that I love, Brené Brown. Mm. She's got a couple of podcasts that I love to listen to. Anything Oprah, like the Super Soul Sunday. I love stuff like that. Books. Right now, I am reading a book by Sonia Renee Taylor called The Body Is Not an Apology. And that is, if anyone is struggling with body image, that is, you know, women struggle with that and men too. There are some men who struggle with that as well. It's a really good book. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm working on that. If I had to recommend a book that I've already read, a couple pop up for me. One is The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. I think that Ruiz. That I think if everyone read that and just lived that, it would make life so much easier for us. And then that's a ripple effect, right? And that's, I think, the point of all of this is people think it's selfish to maybe work on themselves. But what did Gandhi say? Gandhi said, be the change you wish to be in the world. Be the change you wish to see in the world. Yes. So, because it all starts with us, and we cannot change the system that has created this white supremacy culture unless we start with ourselves. It has to start individually, because unless we change that part of it, we're just going to keep recreating through that same consciousness. So, and speaking of consciousness, the book that brought me to my coach was Eckhart Tolle, A New Earth. And so I would recommend his book, or The Power of Now, also is by him. And I know there's a ton of books out there. Like my bookshelf, and this isn't even all of them, but you can't see, the audience can't see if they're listening, but yeah. I have shelves and shelves of books, and I could talk about books all over the place because they've just made such a big difference in my life.
Let's end it at that. I think we have a lot of action steps of podcasts to listen to, books to read, and some information to digest. And ultimately, I'm going to try to be a little more compassionate and respectful myself. And I hope the listeners do the same. Any last words from you, Linda? You've been incredible, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. This has been amazing. I really thank you so much for the honor and the privilege that it is to be here and to be able to spread this message. And I just want to tell people that there is hope, and you can actually choose to enjoy life. It's a choice.
Thanks for listening to Rochester Business Connections. Don't forget to share this, rate, and comment on your favorite platform. You can also email me, ben@valbertmarketing.com. Let's connect soon. Until then, keep thriving, everyone. We'll be right back.